It's the Bert Cohen Show. Talk about history. My goodness gracious. History is being made in Scotland, which is still, at least at the moment, part of the United Kingdom. And it may eventually, of course, be the former United Kingdom. The vote is coming up on September 18th. Today, as this is being recorded, today is the 16th. And Scotland is about to vote either yes or no. And that's about staying with the United Kingdom or becoming an independent nation. It's a big deal. It's a really big deal. And, you know, if Scotland does it, independence movements may pick up momentum and then sweep the world. There's Scotland. There's Catalonia in Spain, currently in Spain, which votes November 9th. Kurdistan, Flanders, the Basque country, which is now in Spain, and of course Quebec. Who knows, maybe even the dreaded southern states will finally leave the rest of us in peace. The Scottish independent movement is said to be a curious mix of left and right, rich and poor, marginal and mainstream, and it is energizing such movements as the Texas Nationalist Movement, and clearly has considerable geopolitical importance. Opponents warn that independence movements could trigger the Balkanization of Europe. Others say Balkanization may be just what Europe needs. And I'm very pleased to have with us across that large pond, Bob Campbell, who is in the north of England, who is Scottish, I believe. Bob, thanks for being with us.
Hello, Bert. How are you?
Oh, not bad, not bad. I assume the weather there is sort of gray and rainy. It's like that all the time, isn't it?
We've got blue skies at the moment. It's nice and sunny.
Oh, nice.
Rain when I go outside. Or is it I don't go outside when it rains, so I get confused.
I understand. Well, if there's a lot going on here, and you've been following this, it seems that if they vote yes, formerly Great Britain will be even less great. It is said that the Conservatives, also known as the Tories in London, only come to Scotland to hunt grouse. There's not a lot of investment, I guess, from the central government in London with the people of Scotland. So you write, Bob, that the Scottish National Party, which is leading this independence movement, actually did not ask for this referendum. How did this vote come to pass?
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, the Scottish National Party has existed as an organisation for a very long time to fight for independence in Scotland. But they didn't ask for independence on this occasion. They were approached by the Prime Minister, David Cameron, who proposed to them the prospect of a referendum to offer Scotland an in-out vote for independence. Their reaction was to say that they didn't want independence, that they wanted a third option called Devo-Max, which was maximising the delineation of powers to the Scottish regional government, so that they had more control over what was happening there. They didn't at any point ask for independence. When David Cameron made clear that he wouldn't allow them to put that option in, he wouldn't allow them to have any discussion in how that referendum was put together, then David Cameron went ahead with the referendum, and the Scottish National Party found themselves in a position where it was very difficult for them to be anything other than supporting the yes, let's break up the union side. So they find themselves leading that, while David Cameron, as leader of the Conservative Party, decided to take the position of leading the Better Together campaign to keep Scotland in the United Kingdom, but knowing that he hasn't got any seats in Scotland, for you've got no MPs sitting who come from Scotland in the UK government. The UK government, the Conservative parties have been very unpopular since the Margaret Thatcher days in Scotland, and Scotland is much more sort of left of politics, whereas his party is very right of politics. It's also been a testing ground for Conservative policies, you know, everything from the poll tax down the years, let's try it in Scotland before we introduce it to the Scottish people, to the rest of the UK people. And Scotland really has felt disgruntled by that going down the years.
Well, interesting. So it seems like, if I got this right, Bob Campbell, that Scotland, the Scottish National Party, wanted just a bit more autonomy and some perhaps more respect, and David Cameron, leader of the Conservative Party, said, you're either with us or against us. It sounds like that they still, in a way, they wanted Scotland to remain in sort of a subservient, less than position. Is that an accurate picture?
I don't think so. I think even the north of England is pretty much a backwater in terms of David Cameron's eyes. Scotland is further away. I think what happens in Scotland is of less importance to them. I don't think he saw it in those terms. I think it was being quite a different thing. When he took power, at our last election, he was the first British government who didn't have a majority and he needed to go into coalition with the Liberal Democrats. So they very quickly formed a coalition agreement to agree that we'll put these policies through, but we will allow you to put those policies through agreement. And part of the agreement was guaranteeing them a five-year term in office, whereas usually it's 4 years and anything up to a maximum legal 5 years. And they have, from the offset, agreed that 5 years would be the term. As part of that agreement, one of the big things that the Liberal Democrats wanted out of it was a restructure of the House of Lords.
Uh-huh.
The Conservatives agreed that they would do that. And when it came to it, all of their MPs went against the coalition agreement and prevented the Liberal Democrats from getting this big change that they were after. So the Liberal Democrats, having a little pock shot at the Tories, put an end to one of their policies, which would have been the rewriting of the election boundaries in England, which would have given the Conservatives a considerable advantage in the next election. Now, a lot of what they've done is really unpopular, and in order to have a government that didn't get a majority and who introduced a lot of very unpopular policies, mm-hmm. in order to try and be re-elected, they felt that they needed to have those boundary changes, and now they weren't going to get them. It does seem that it was shortly after that David Cameron's solution to that problem was to wind up the Scots in order to encourage devolution, because if he can halve off a large part of the UK that doesn't have any Conservative MPs, then he has lost a large part of opposition in Parliament, and it significantly increases his chances of being re-elected.
So it seems that the right wing's David Cameron wins either way. So if Liberal Scotland stays, then he looks like, he won something. And if they go, that's, as you say, it excised his Liberal people that don't really support him anyway.
He does win both ways, and a little bit more drastically than that. While he took the lead of the Better Together campaign and kept visiting Scotland, knowing that would wind up and antagonise the Scots, you know, various other things happened. He released, there was a big news story that was in Scotland, but not in England. It was front page news, it was main 6 o'clock news on the television, to point out there had been a Freedom of Information request leakage of information which had highlighted that Margaret Thatcher, when she was in power, was furious with her Chancellor, Norman Lamont, for not hammering the taxation in Scotland harder, and not giving, you know, for not cutting the government spend to Scotland as severely as she had wanted it to be. And part of the same leak was to say that the current government had every intention of introducing the cutbacks that Margaret Thatcher had failed to implement. So from David Cameron's perspective, if Scotland stayed in, he would cut their money, and if they separated out, he gets an increased majority within the House of Commons. So he very literally is winning both ways, but also in media eyes by being seen to be the leader of the organisation to keep Britain together. He's effectively trying to say to the world, hey, this wasn't my fault, I did everything I could to try and hold the whole thing together. But saying, you know, releasing news like that to the Scots is very much saying to them, you know, if you can stay with us if you want, but we're going to punish you if you do. There's so many more things. Everything from threatening to stopping them from having the pound as currency, which Labour agreed with and the Lib Dems agreed with, will stop Scotland from having the pound if they go independent. But as the SNP pointed out very clearly, you don't actually have to have England's permission to do that. The pound, as most currencies, have floated on, you know, are sold internationally on the open market. Any country can buy in and buy out of different currencies and do on a regular basis. So the SNP pointing out very quickly that Scotland, you know, England wasn't in a position to stop Scotland from having the pound, and that actually wouldn't be in England's interests to do that anyway. For companies that trade on both sides of the border, it would be really inconvenient if England forced Scotland to have a different currency. So the likelihood of that happening seemed very, very small indeed. And it was another thing that is like making false threats. You know, if you don't do what we tell you to, we're going to punish you. It's not going to evoke any other reaction than, how dare you say that to us? You're clearly not on our side. We don't want to be in your club anymore. The whole thing has been geared towards forcing the Scots into a position where they believe that they have independently chosen, you know, devolution. It's really quite distressing.
Well, again, if you just tuned into the Bert Cohen Show, today our guest is Bob Campbell, who is in the north of England, who is Scottish, and we're talking about the huge, powerful vote that's coming up on Thursday, September 18th. It's huge. It's really, really significant. And there's so much to talk about there. Let me ask you, as most American journalists always look at the non-rational, what's the mood there? What's it feel like in the streets? Describe the energy level. Is it tense, or what do you sense?
You need to remember that I'm in England.
I understand.
In the north of England. I go home and I visit my mother, and I speak to my brother, and he both live in Edinburgh, or just outside Edinburgh. And there's very kind of strong feelings in Scotland on both sides. So, my mother feels very strongly in keeping the union together. The minister in her church feels very strongly about wanting Scottish independence. There are sort of very strong views on both sides, and from the perspective of the separating Scotland, let's have Scotland as independent, you can understand a people who have voted Labour and SNP as left-wing politics,
yes.
And have consistently got the right-wing government who are introducing policies on them that they didn't ask for and they didn't vote for, then they're feeling that, well, what's the point in us voting? What we say doesn't matter, doesn't have an impact on what's happening within our country.
Mm.
That, from the Yes campaign, is very much the feeling that, we want to be independent because we don't want a Conservative government. Where I live in the north of England is again sort of more left wing than right wing in politics, and we get we were getting cutbacks to public services of 40%.
30%.
There are places when you go down south where there were Conservative areas that were actually their councils were getting an increase in funding while we were facing 40% cuts in public services. We were having to close down the athletic stadium in Middlesbrough on the lead up to the Olympics. Whereas down south, where his heartlands are, they are very much cushioned from those cuts, and Scotland feels that very much as well, that they are on the receiving end of Conservative policies.
Mm.
So if from their perspective, if they go independent, they will never again have a right-wing government. But from my perspective, living in the northeast of England, no, please, I will always have a Conservative government if Cameron is successful in pushing this through, which very much looks like at this point it could go either way.
Yes.
We're increasingly worried that that's going to happen.
Mm. So, as a person who is of the left and the Labour Party, not the new Labour Party, but it sounds like the traditional Labour Party is still strong in the north of England, and it sounds like if that large group of voters in Scotland is no longer voting in the rest of England, then you're stuck with a right-wing government for a long time. Is that one of your concerns?
That's my concern, and selfishly from my perspective.
Wow.
Likewise, I can see from the Scottish perspective the people in Scotland who are thinking, if we cut ties, then that's not something we're going to have to face in Scotland again.
Interesting. And of course, I look at examples in history. There was that phrase, taxation without representation, which, the former colonies here on this side of the Atlantic, we didn't start out wanting independence. We just wanted our rights, as equal British subjects. And then there's the independence movement down in the Confederacy, the south of America. They weren't getting their fair share from the government in Washington, which was focusing mainly on and helping the north and didn't help the south particularly much. And, of course, that got a little bit violent. And it's obviously there hasn't been any violence, has there?
No.
Well, that's a good thing.
It's quite surprising when you see policies being introduced, such as introducing student fees for students going to university and allowing them to rise as far as 9,000, which then becomes every university is a £9,000 per year fee university. It means that people on lower incomes can't afford an education. They basically have no income and they've got £9,000 of fees to cover. They can borrow it. There's a system set up to allow students to borrow. And when they earn salaries of £21,000 or above, they then start to repay that debt. But this is effectively a government saying being in debt is a bad thing. You've got to pay off the national debt. And then numbering the well-off students don't have debts. Your daddy will pay. The poor people from poorer backgrounds are having to face the dilemma: am I actually going to create such a deficit for myself at the beginning of my working career. You've got the health service where we in the north are having hospitals closed. The health secretary is actually pointing out that investment in health has increased. Well, it has. They've built more down south and they've closed more up north. We've got, with ambulances now, we've got targets for ambulances that they have to reach 80% of call-outs within 8 minutes. Now, very few hospitals, because of cutbacks, a few ambulance services are actually achieving that target. They are regularly and frequently failing to meet those targets. And there's more and more horror stories in relation to that. It's cutbacks in health, it's cutbacks in education. It's where we were before the last government, the previous government came in. We spent a lot of time, a lot of money rebuilding health and rebuilding education. And, it just seems a backward step that we're now taking the money away from the people. We're now taxing disabled people. There's a tax that only applies to the poor, the bedroom tax. It's only for people who don't have enough money and are living on benefits. And if they have an extra bedroom, they are taxed on that. But a rich person living in a larger house isn't taxed for having extra bedrooms. This is a tax that only applies to poor people.
Oh, my goodness.
Never heard of a tax that can only tax the poor. More and more people being driven to food banks. There's been an increase in suicides. And the government adamantly saying that those two things are not linked. You set that against the Scottish agenda, and this is what Scotland's seen with an English government. Well, does Scotland want that, or does Scotland want to cut the ties and say, you know what, if you're going to mess around like that, do it. But you do it on your own patch, not on ours.
Boy, interesting.
Government have cut back so severely that it's expensive to do. And as a consequence, the national deficit has gone up, not down, since they came into power. So they've closed down public services, and there's now less money in than there was before. They haven't made the savings that they'd set out to achieve. They've squandered public money on making people out of work and closing services. It's heartbreaking to watch.
So it seems like in the rest of, the Europe, the continent, that, there's all these austerity programs. The big banks are calling in their debts and requiring governments to institute really harsh austerity programs. And again, it's falling entirely on poorer people. So there is a significant national deficit for the UK, and the central government is, tell me how they're handling it and how the austerity programs have been made. What about tourism? Tourism is a big thing. And how have the bond ratings been affected? Have the wealthy people been making out just fine? Is that how it's working?
It's tax cuts for the rich, yes. tourism's an interesting one, because under the previous government, they regionalized tourism. So they set up regional development agencies, and one of the jobs for the regional development agency is to develop tourism in their area, looking at destination marketing on a global scale to attract people into an area. And when they were in that area, they can, it makes it easier for them to travel, making it easier for them to find the resources and the leisure that they're looking for. And marketing that globally. This government came in, closed down the regional development agencies, and didn't provide an alternative. So basically, tourism, which directly brings about economic growth, was just tourism wasn't shut down, but tourism inherently is lots of small companies, who don't in themselves have the resource to globally market. And all of a sudden, the means by which to do that was just taken away. So that certainly hit companies in that sector very hard. So there's very little done now to promote UK as a tourist destination. So that will be having an impact on revenues. From their government's perspective, this is just a cutback. This is just a saving. This is one thing we haven't paid for now.
Seems awfully short-sighted, but I wonder about who are the wealthy people of Scotland, are they as, I mean, you might not be able to generalize, is there support among the wealthier elite in Scotland for the yes vote, or do they make out better by...
Scotland is very split between the yes and no vote. There are people who feel very strongly about keeping it together, and there are those who feel very strongly about splitting it apart. There are those nationalists who have always been nationalists, who people I went to school with who adamantly thought Scotland would be better going alone. But they're a very, very small proportion of people, and they're from all walks of life. But otherwise, there are people who are thinking, I don't like the mismanagement of the economy, let's go in and moan. And those are the people who feel, no, we as a nation can do much better as a nation together. There's more we can do in unity than there is we can do as separate nations. Who feel very strongly that we should keep the union together. And there are people of all walks of life who feel very strongly on both sides. So it is something that could go either way, but increasingly the yes vote is getting more and more momentum. From when it set out, the reason the Scottish National Party didn't want a referendum yes in and out of Scotland is because they hadn't given it any thought. It's not something they'd asked for.
Right.
They didn't think it would ever happen. And all the polls in Scotland demonstrated that the people in Scotland didn't want it. So they weren't going to scream for something that the Scottish people didn't want. But when they were given no choice, it's in or out. So, you know, as a Scottish National Party, they were lumbered into the position of having to support the let's separate side,
right,
and finding the leader of the Let's Keep It Together campaign, David Cameron, winding up the Scottish people, pushing people, you know, antagonising people into a yes position. Their position has grown in momentum, and they're enjoying the prospects of where they could be on Thursday night.
Well, I wonder, Bob Campbell, whom we're speaking with in the north of England, who it sounds like you prefer a no vote so that you can have a more left-leaning government as an English citizen. The wealthy people there, I had heard, I don't know if this is true, that there was an advertisement for the Keep It Together, the Vote No, the Better Together Vote No, that it had some wealthy people, aristocratic type people, saying they would have to pay more taxes, please vote no. And how, according to what I heard, that after that ad, of course, the movement for yes went up dramatically. Is there, I wonder how much of a split. There's certainly more of a class consciousness everywhere in the world, I think, but America. How much of this is class related? Any sense of that?
Scotland's in a wonderfully perverse position in relation to class. It's from growing up in Scotland, going to school in Scotland, it's the people of Scotland really like the underdog. They really they have a reversed snobbery. They would be proud to be working class, proud to be poor, and put down rich people, as opposed to the other way around. It doesn't mean that they don't try to be successful.
Right. Of
and part of it's their sense of humour as well. But there is a reverse snobbery. There is not snobbery would be something that would be looked down on very much by the Scottish people. So the rest of the world is being rich and being successful is a good thing. They'll have a dig at it for a laugh. Probably probably doesn't fit the American psyche particularly well, but Scottish people are quite proud to be unsnobbish in that way.
I appreciate that. It sounds lovely, I must say. I could go into it here, but I won't. But so, how much of a class war is it, or is that not a factor at all in the?
I don't think it's a factor at all.
Good.
It could particularly have been a factor, particularly when you were looking at the banking crisis and the bankers still getting dividends, and you know, it could easily have turned into a class structure. It would have been quite easy for Alex Salmond to have turned it into a class battle, either to his credit or you know, he hasn't done that. He hasn't made it a rich versus poor debate. He hasn't particularly been there's been very particularly in the south of Scotland, there is a lot of anti-English sentiment, and there really hasn't been any in this campaign. They've been very proudly saying that they've enjoyed being in partnership with England for so many years. Any resentment in the people have in the south of Scotland is somewhat misguided, in that it's blaming the England for what they did sort of hundreds of years ago in Scotland. But it wasn't the English, it was the Protestants. And the people who shout, the people in the south of Scotland would have been Protestant and would have been fighting on the English side. Mm-hmm. And the people who shout loudest about being sort of anti-English for that reason are actually Protestant. So they would have been on the English side in that particular battle. So there is mythology that builds into sort of Scottish history as much as the facts that's there in Scottish history. But in resentment has not come out in any of the tweets, any of the Facebook messages, any of the news media campaigns. There hasn't been particularly an Scottish anti-Englishism taking place openly within those campaigns.
And correct me if I'm wrong, both England and Scotland are pretty much Anglican, also known as Episcopal, correct?
It's probably more complicated than that.
But it's not...
If you go to Glasgow, Glasgow is pretty 50-50 split between sort of Protestant and Catholic. But the Church of Scotland is very different from the Church of England.
Uh-huh.
But if you go further north, the islands, you're getting into the Free Church, which is my father telling me that, you know, on the island it was all the Free Church of Scotland, and there was the first Jehovah's Witness who landed on the island, and nobody would talk to them, and everybody was giving them grief, and my dad took them in and actually found out that everything the Jehovah's Witnesses believe is virtually identical to what the Free Church believe. You put a different name on it, a different label on it, and everybody gets sort of scared of what the differences are. But mm-hmm. you know, there are so many similarities between so many religions that
sure.
a lot of the antagonism people have between religions isn't always justified.
Of course. You know, and people say, I think, not always correctly, that in Northern Ireland, it's largely a religious thing. It seems to me it's a lot more than that.
But they get their history right. and they actually understand their history. Scotland beautifully misunderstands its history and makes it poetically different from what happened in reality. And in Ireland, it was much more the English, this William of Orange invading
right.
Ireland. Which is why you have, you know, the Orange Marches to celebrate William of Orange's successes over the Catholics, to
right.
rub salt in the wound, ha ha, we beat you, and to keep on doing those marches through the Catholic area every year.
Yeah.
they see that as part of their heritage to be able to wind up the Catholics in that way. There is naturally a very, very strong Catholic-Protestant separation, but it's a true representation of history, whereas in Scotland it was very different. Scotland, it was Protestant-Catholic, but then it was only the Highlands in Scotland who were Catholic. At that time, it was the South was Protestant and would have been on the English side. So while we talk about Scotland-England battles, they weren't Scottish-England battles, they were Protestant-Catholic battles. Ireland at least understands the difference between Protestants and Catholics and the origins of the battles that they hold so strongly.
Well, it's always good to understand history. We Americans, unfortunately, rarely understand history. We prefer to believe myths instead of actual history. But moving on to some of the issues that, you know, the independence, the vote yes movement is, there's the health system. There's national health. There has been for a long time throughout the UK. And Alex Salmond, who you mentioned earlier, is leader of the Scottish government and of the pro-independence campaign. He says, and I quote, "Only with the powers of independence can we secure real job-creating powers and ensure that our national health service is fully protected." Is he right?
There's a lot of anger about that in England as well, that our current government are trying to sign up to a European policy that would give them the right to sell off the National Health Service, which gives health free at the point of care, into private hands. And it would give, this legislation would give, if anyone tried to reverse that, it would give those companies the right to sue the government for losses that they would perceive as a result of taking it back into public ownership. So while the Conservative government, that meets their ideologies very nicely, and while Europe has a policy to do that, and they were very quickly trying to snap up and sign up to that policy as a means of not just making the National Health Service privatized, but to prevent it from ever being made public again. So naturally, large parts of the country are opposed to that. Scotland's opposed to that. And Alex Salmond is concerned and is rightly shouting to say that the Conservatives are trying to push this through before the referendum so that Scotland won't have a choice as to whether they face those European powers or not. So when Alex Salmond was talking about it, that's really what he was talking about. There is a double standard, though, because when there was a campaign from ministers in Parliament in London to oppose those powers, to stop the minister from signing that, and none of Alex Salmond's ministers turned up for that vote. So, I think from his perspective, what happens in England, I don't really care. I just want you to stop doing this in Scotland. But it would have, that was very much seen as a betrayal by Labour that, we really needed you here to help stop this from going through. This is something nobody wants, not just the Scots.
Well, there does seem to be, and I think a lot of people here in America on the left and right kind of like the idea of, people affected by decisions being able to participate in that decision-making process. I know that's fairly simplistic, but, it certainly does have its appeal. What about public pensions? How would they be affected by a yes vote? Are they funded by all of the UK or just by Scotland now? And how would public pensions be affected?
We have two elements of pensions. We have a state pension where basically through your working life, you pay a national insurance. You pay tax and you pay national insurance. The national insurance covers things like your health costs. It covers things that was supposed to cover things like your pension. Now, down the years, they've been realizing that people are beginning to live longer, and the money people have paid in to national insurance isn't enough to cover that.
Right.
So they've been doing things like increasing the pension age to make people so you can't actually claim it until you're older, because we've got to somehow manage this pot. I'm fairly resigned to the fact that by the time I'm 47, and by the time I reach retirement, I fully accept that that won't be there. There'll be money to pay out pensions in that way. In addition to that, there are also private pensions.
Sure.
So people have their private pensions. They brought out a few years ago a legislation to make employers set up pension schemes for their staff. Now, the employer would then be required to contribute to the pension for the staff. The staff, having had it set up, have the option to close it if they want to.
Mm.
So, you know, that would affect throughout the UK in terms of legislation sort of at the moment. So the pension is both private and public, but even the private pension part of it would be paid by the employer. One of the other things that's worth noting is if you go back quite a few years ago, quite a lot of years ago, there was one of the major banks that went under. I think it was an American bank that had crashed, and a large amount of British people had their pensions, their private pensions in that bank. You've lost the lot overnight. So this corporate responsibility of saying, you know, you have a responsibility to save for your pension, you have a responsibility to save for your retirement, well, that works fine. But if you're relying on
private
sector organisations to provide that, and if then those private sector organisations go out of business, you've then got people who spend their whole life saving and have nothing to show for it at the end of the day.
So how would the independence vote affect those public pensions in specific?
I can't imagine it would. I could be wrong on that, but I would. You know, Scotland will continue to provide pensions, and England will continue to provide pensions. It's just one won't have an influence upon the other. Scotland already decides how much of its funding is spent. You know, Scotland will just determine for itself its own pension rules.
Mm-hmm.
This government have just brought out a policy to allow employees to cash in their pension early.
Oh.
You can retrieve all of the money and effectively then have no pension. That seems a very kind of dangerous thing to the president to set, to create that opportunity for people.
Well, what I want to turn to a different subject with regard to the vote yes, vote no, independence for Scotland. What about public education? Is that a big issue? And education obviously is, you know, absolutely essential for people to lift themselves up and hopefully get out of poverty.
I think it already is different, Bert. Scotland has a lot of its powers devolved to Scotland. Scotland has a completely different educational system from school all the way to university. So in England, you do sort of GCSEs for 2 years, and you do A levels for 2 years. In Scotland, you do equivalent to GCSEs, you know, O grades in Scotland, and then you do Scottish Highers. Now, that's a 1 year course that covers three quarters of what the 2 year course does in England. So, technically, in Scotland, you can go to university a year earlier, as my brother did. But also, because Scotland has control over its finances, Scotland has already, when the government introduced £9,000 fees for all students,
right,
Scotland said, no, you don't. We're going to allocate our pot of money towards education so that Scottish students in Scottish universities don't pay. But if it does mean that they had to introduce policies where if somebody comes from England up to Scotland, they can't just sort of used that as an excuse to spend Scotland's money to get their education free over the border. So Scotland did put in boundaries to prevent that from happening. You've got to be in Scotland for 3 years or whatever. I'm not sure what the boundaries are. So Scotland already has a different university system. It's already got a different schooling system. So moving to being a different country isn't going to affect their education system at all.
Well, that's reassuring. I wonder, and again, if you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. Our guest today is Bob Campbell, who is in the north of England, who is Scottish, but is left-leaning, so he prefers that the Liberals, the left in Scotland, stay part of England so they can get rid of the Tories. We talk about education. I understand the voting age there. Is this right? It's age 16? And if that's the case, boy, how is that going to affect the yes or no vote?
The voting age in Scotland is 18.
They've
changed it for this referendum.
Oh, no kidding.
So they've brought it in for this referendum. It was the Conservatives that introduced that. Again, to what end is that thinking that younger people will be more patriotic, will be more... we could go it alone. We don't need, without understanding the full implications of the decisions. They will be led by the heart.
Yes.
They're going to be led by the brain. So I'm not saying, as you grow older, you get a better understanding of the wider implications and that things are not always as they appear to be. then a 16-year-old allowing more people of a younger age is again pushing more people, encouraging more people into a yes vote, I would imagine. And I wouldn't be surprised if David Cameron had set it up specifically for that purpose.
Wow.
But our voting age is 18. It was just introduced for this referendum to give, people who are younger the vote there. My mother was asking, if I got to vote, and saying, well, no, because I don't live in England. It would be quite wrong for me to be making constitutional decisions, voting-wise, in a country that I don't live in. I would be making changes to policies and practices that don't affect me.
Sure.
So consequently, likewise, you can be English living in Scotland and you get to vote. You can be Scottish living in England and you don't get to vote. It's the people who live there now who are making the decision.
And it is quite a big decision. And fear is always a powerful political tool. Is the No campaign manipulating and exaggerating fears of a breakup? What is the role of fear in this whole dynamic?
I think fear has largely been used more antagonistically. So saying that if you don't stay in Britain, then we won't let you have the pound. If you don't leave, Marks and Spencers will leave the country. If you, and several large stores coming out and saying, well, we will move our headquarters down south of the border. The oil companies saying they would move their headquarters south of the border. Again, would they? when it actually came sort of to shove, what has changed as a constitutional boundary? In economic terms, what does that mean? Now, if that, from an economic perspective, a company will be looking at, well, how much taxation do I have to pay? What are the advantages of living in England? What are the advantages of living in Scotland? The fear-mongering, particularly when it is subsequently then shown to be not to be the case, mm-hmm. is effectively breaking trust in the people making the arguments. So I don't think that the fear mongering that has taken place has been anything but counterproductive.
Uh-huh.
But again, the large part of the No campaign has been based on fear. So you don't want to break up because much more than focusing on the benefits of staying together, the benefits of what we can do in unity together that we wouldn't be able to do separate and apart.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that they're missing that. And one of the big economic issues, I would think, might be oil, petroleum. England, correct me if I'm wrong, has relied on North Sea oil revenue to save its economy. What happens with the revenue from the North Sea oil should they separate?
I mean, I remember right back to my schooling days when the people who supported the SNP were pointing out even from those days that effectively the oil revenues and saying that we are effectively an oil-based economy. I don't think we are an oil-based economy, to be honest. I think banking is a far larger sector than oil, but it is certainly a very large sector, and the oil fields very clearly are off Scottish waters rather than being off English waters. So, you know, any taxation you would have thought would have been paid to Scotland rather than paid to England. And that's been the mainstay argument for the Scottish National Party, I think, more or less since it was formed. There are debates, and I've seen some ridiculous arguments on television about how the value of that oil deposit varies. Some people will think it's worth a lot, some people think it's worth less. But those values, when you consider that Scotland as a country has about a tenth of the population of the population of England. If you take in a large resource like that to service a country so small, then that, I would imagine, would serve Scotland very, you know, very nicely. The problem with oil is it's a short-term solution. I'm already looking at purchasing an electric car. I'm sick to death of, I don't think you've got it as bad as we've got it, but our fuel prices are through the roof. I mean, it cost me £40 a week to travel relatively short distances in the UK. I'm sick of paying at the pump. I like the idea of switching to an electric vehicle, and there are more and more of that being created. We're saying we're an oil-based economy. Oh, how long are we going to be reliant on oil?
Yeah, and
the oil will run out, and you know,
oh, we gotta get
what you're going to do then, and secondly, what happens when the world finds an alternative?
Well, we have to get off that. There's no question. I got to ask too about, you know, Downing Street, the center of the British government. They're always allied with the U.S. and get very much involved in the U.S. wars. There are nuclear subs stationed off of Scotland. And I understand if Scotland pulls out, they would be forced out as well. I wonder how much that foreign policy, I mean, I can't help but think that liberal Scotland might not want to be, you know, involved in British wars as much. I wonder how much of a factor that may be in the vote coming up.
I think you'll find a large proportion of the people that were fighting in those wars were probably, you know, from Britain, were probably from Scotland. The UK has, like many countries, has agreements with America. And in the North York Moors, the Americans used to have big golf balls that were surveillance equipment, you know, just in the middle of this national park. And when they were built, there was an outcry by local people that there was a monstrosity on the landscape. When they took them down, there was an outcry that they were losing a monument. When they put some more ones up that are kind of rectangular, and there was an outcry of this monstrosity on the landscape. But again, people don't like change. They like what's there all the time.
Yes.
Again, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Scotland in the management of its economy is then carrying out separate negotiations with the American government to, you know. But again, if we have a more liberal voice around the table, You know, I can't see them. I can't see America considering Scotland as a major partner, though it's a very small country.
No, of course not.
But you're getting a more liberal voice around the table. You know, I think we need a little bit of that around the world. We need to stop shooting people. We need to stop blowing them up. We need to start building friends and building allies.
Yeah. Well, this has been very, very educational. We've been talking with Bob Campbell, who is of Scottish descent, is in the north of England, about the upcoming big, big vote, and the world will be watching. Catalonia, Kurdistan, the Basque region, Flanders, we will see. And thank you so much for being with us today on the Bert Cohen Show. Very informative, and we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on, Bert. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could be wrong. You say you told me that you wanna hold me, but you know you're not that strong. I just can't do what I've done before. I just can't beg you. Deserve